the high echelons of society. It's no secret that the wealthy participants of the world live in a different reality from the rest of society. From their luxurious homes to their large weekend estates, their way of life in general, the wealthy get to enjoy a lot more than the average person. Take, for instance, the expensive and important socials the wealthy enjoy partaking in throughout various times of the year. In this case, the Winter Gala, which was held at the Langham Hotel in London. Several of London's and the world's wealthiest came to enjoy a luxurious and entertaining evening full of music and theater. Among the many in attendance were Bernard Arnault, Sir Richard Branson, Francois Bettencourt Meyers, Prince William and Princess Catherine, just to name a few. However, a couple names on this list that weren't as recognized were Lady Alice Ashcroft and Catherine Collins. Well into the evening, Lady Alice had collected two champagne flutes and was in search of Catherine. She was filled with warmth at the thought of having Catherine spend the night at her house. With both their husbands out on business, Lady Alice and Catherine could finally express their love for each other. But this thought was shattered when Lady Alice saw Catherine speaking to a gentleman she'd never seen before. This man was wearing a dark red tuxedo with a matching top hat. She watched as this gentleman, who was particularly handsome, she had to admit, said something that made Catherine blush and smile. Then he removed his glove from his hand and pricked his fingertips with a pocket knife. He grabbed and pulled Catherine by her hair so that she faced him. He then held his fingers over Catherine's mouth and allowed a few drops of his blood to drip onto her tongue. At first, Catherine looked appalled, but within a few seconds, her eyes widened and she grabbed the gentleman's hand and began to lick and drink the blood dripping out of his fingers in a frenzy. Lady Alice dropped her champagne flutes as she saw Catherine walking away with this gentleman, her mouth never leaving the man's fingers. Catherine Collins was never seen again. I'm Agent Kai, and I've decided to make my reports for Lyos in the form of a podcast. My hope is that you, dear listener, will discover the truth of this world and open your eyes to it. The Palm Court, located within the Langham Hotel, was quiet with sparse company that winter afternoon. Snow had been falling all morning and had increased in intensity once noon struck. I was afraid Lady Alice Ashcroft had decided to abandon our meeting, and I was about to text her to reschedule when she walked in, her Burberry coat dusted in snow. "I'm sorry I'm late, Mr. Wildfell," she said, taking off her coat. She wore a large Belmont dress with Christian Louis Vuitton heels. "Traffic in the snow can be bloody brutal." I nodded. "It can be. I'm glad you made it, Lady Alice." "Yes, well, we have important business to discuss," she said, removing her Ferragamo leather gloves. "Let's order our tea and get right to it." "I hope you don't mind, but I took the liberty of ordering us a cup," I said, waving over the server. I ordered a jasmine silver needle for Lady Alice and a glass of Tattinger for myself. Lady Alice sipped her tea, her pinky pointing up into the air. "Jasmine silver needle," she said. "How'd you know?" "I do my research when it comes to my clients," I said. "And you strike me as a summer-loving person. Therefore, the summer taste of silver needle tea, in my opinion, suited you well." Lady Alice smiled. "You're a true gentleman. Thank you, Mr. Wildfell." I raised my glass and took a sip of my champagne. For all intents and purposes, dear listener, Lady Alice was under the pretense that she was meeting up with a private investigator named Lawrence Wildfell, an eccentric private eye that specializes in finding missing persons, especially those who had gone missing in mysterious ways. One of our intelligencers, placed in high society, recommended the services of Mr. Wildfell to Lady Alice. And, of course, Blade made sure to set up this legend through his impeccable design via fabricated news articles. These articles stated that Lawrence Wildfell had helped Scotland Yard several times in locating missing persons thought to have disappeared without a trace. "If you will, Lady Alice," I said, "please, tell me what you know about your missing friend." Lady Alice began with the winter gala at the Langham Hotel. She and Catherine were excited to be at the gala. Catherine more so than Lady Alice, because she, Catherine, wanted to meet Prince William and Princess Catherine. And meet the royals they did. While Catherine thought the royals to be a dream, Lady Alice saw them as pretentious and, dare she say, boring. The gala itself was entertaining, but not what Lady Alice thought it was going to be. For the most part, people spoke about their favorite vacation spots, designers, yachts, and who had the best private jets. Very few, if any, spoke about bettering the world through donations or setting up new foundations dedicated to bettering education and the future of humanity. It seemed that Lady Alice was the only one who cared for such things. Not even Catherine took much interest in opening this topic of conversation. As the night went on, Lady Alice recalled seeing a man in a dark red tuxedo with matching top hat speaking to various ladies. "He was quite handsome," Lady Alice said, "but had a rather serious demeanor about him." Lady Alice pointed the man out to Catherine and asked if she knew who he was. Catherine said she didn't, and when they asked several people at the gala about Mr. Red Hat, no one seemed to know his identity, and, oddly enough, no one seemed to care about who he was. Even Lady Alice, she admitted, didn't seem to care that this odd stranger was there. It wasn't until 10:30 that Lady Alice decided to grab one last glass of champagne for Catherine and herself. The plan was to drink up and head back to her house for a girl's night. But when she returned to her table, Catherine was gone. Lady Alice glanced around the ballroom to no avail. Therefore, she started walking around in search of her friend. She found Catherine by the stairs speaking to Mr. Red Hat. "I'm not sure why," Lady Alice said, "but for some reason, the thought of walking up to them and interrupting their conversation never crossed my mind. All I could do was watch them in morbid fascination. Watch as Mr. Red Hat pricked his fingertips and fed Catherine his blood. I mean, at first she was appalled by the act, but in the blink of an eye, she started drinking and licking that man's fingers like she'd tasted the fountain of youth." Lady Alice admitted that, while she was horrified at what she was witnessing, the thought of stopping or going after Catherine when she saw Mr. Red Hat leaving with her never crossed her mind. In fact, Lady Alice said that she didn't give it much thought afterwards. It wasn't until the following morning, when she was having her tea, that it struck her. Catherine had been abducted. She tried calling, texting, even emailing. She then tried her house, but she received no response. I don't understand," Lady Alice said. "How? I didn't try to stop her. How could I just go home after that without being concerned?" She took a sip of her tea. It's almost as if this Red Hat person is a vampire that fogged my mind. I can't comprehend what happened, and now my Catherine is missing." "And how long has Catherine been missing now?" I said. "For the better part of 2 weeks. Can you describe this Red Hat?" Lady Alice rubbed her diamond Cartier necklace. "He was tall, with an athletic build, handsome face, and that red tuxedo with matching top hat. Aside from that, I can't remember anything else." She took a deep breath. "I feel awful, Mr. Wildfell. It's my fault Catherine's gone. I failed her." "No, Lady Alice, you didn't," I said. "There's something odd going on here, that's for sure, but it has nothing to do with you." Lady Alice grabbed my hands. "Will you help me, Mr. Wildfell? I'll pay you whatever you ask for. I just want my Catherine returned to me. I don't think I can go on living without her." "Yes, Lady Alice, I will help you." I held her hands tight. We will find Catherine. She nodded. I believe you, Mr. Waffle. She paused for a moment. What should we do? I pulled out a necklace with a diamond in the shape of a frozen drop of water. Here, take this necklace. Lady Alice took it. What is this? Her blue eyes widened. Oh my god, this is exquisite. It's a good luck charm, I said. I'd like you to wear it at all times while we investigate the disappearance of Miss Collins. Of course. I mean, surely not all times. At all times, Lady Alice, I said. If you want to find Catherine, you will not take that necklace off. I was told you were an eccentric one, Mr. Wildfell, Lady Alice said, placing the necklace around her neck. But eccentric in the best ways. The diamond necklace, dear listener, is a rare one, so much so that only three are in current existence. You see, the diamond in the shape of a drop of water is, in fact, a frozen drop of water from the river Mnemosyne. According to our Lyle's engineers, this diamond comes straight from the actual river of memory that flows throughout Hades. Wearing this necklace prevents the wearer's memory from slipping. From the intelligencer's notes I read while on my flight to London from Nassau, I got the impression that whatever was happening around here, somehow memory was being affected. Of course, this was just a hypothesis, but my time on the field has taught me to trust my hypotheses. Lady Alice and I finished our drinks and made our way toward the last area where Catherine was seen. Catherine Collins was last seen by Lady Alice next to the lobby stairs. I inspected this area carefully using my Anansi shades, sunglasses designed to detect the undetectable by human eyes, searching for anything out of the ordinary. And as luck would have it, the Anansi frames found exactly what I was hoping for, faint traces of blood. Using a hotel cloth napkin from the Palm Court, I rubbed some of the blood onto the cloth. The blood wasn't human. It was red, yes. However, it also contained radiant specks that glowed bright when placed under light. I packaged the cloth into a plastic baggie and sauntered over to the hotel's security office while Lady Alice remained behind to see if walking around the lobby and ballroom jogged any new details into her memory. I was greeted by Len Bale, the head security officer of the Langham Hotel. Once I explained to him who I was and showed him my credentials, all legit thanks to Blade, he fired up the storage computer where they kept all event footage. It took a few minutes to find the footage of the Winter Gala, for he couldn't remember where he'd placed it. For whatever reason, he said, he couldn't recall what he'd titled that night. It should have been Winter Gala, but no file under that title was found. Therefore, Len decided to look through the dates. Even here, Len had trouble recalling the date of the Winter Gala. I had to remind him when the gala was held. Only then did Len finally find the footage of that night, labeled under the date and time of another file that had nothing outstanding on it. This must have been accidentally labeled, he said, opening the file. It gets pretty crazy here when the galas take place. The footage of that night played on the computer screen. At exactly 10:30, Catherine and Mr. Red Hat appeared on camera by the lobby stairs. Mr. Red Hat was described well by Lady Alice. He wore that red tuxedo well, even the top hat suited him, but his face was always turned away from the camera, especially when he pricked his fingertips and had Catherine devour his blood. My God, Len said. How the bloody hell did I not see this? Len turned away from the screen to grab a notebook. I continued to watch the monitor and saw how Red Hat led Catherine away from the hotel, her mouth never leaving his fingers and Red Hat's face always hidden from sight. Len, I said, do you think I can have a copy of this footage? Len turned toward me. A copy of what footage, Gov? The one of the Winter Gala, I said, rewinding the footage to where Red Hat was speaking with Catherine on the lobby stairs anew. Len turned toward the monitor and saw the Red Hat again. Saw this mysterious gentleman prick his fingers and feed Catherine blood. Oh my god, Len said, wide-eyed. How the bloody hell did I not see this before? Shit! We have to call the coppers! He turned away from the monitor and picked up his phone. And just as fast as he grabbed it, he placed it back down on the desk. He glanced at me and chuckled. You ever had those moments when you grab your phone to do something, but then just forget what that something is? I do, I said, pulling up an image on my phone of Pasiphae and Daedalus's wooden bull, where this queen, sexually positioned, was engaged in intercourse with a white bull. I showed this image to Len.
Oh, mate, why would you show me that?
Oh, my apologies, I said. Wrong image. I meant to show you this. I showed Len another image, this one of Catherine.
That's much better, he said. A real beaut right there, that one. Probably a lady of real royal prestige. Shame what happened to her.
I nodded. You've any thought on that?
Len shook his head.
Nagov. Wish I did. Shame, really. Can't believe she vanished into thin air.
You think there's anything on the security footage?
No. If there was, I'd have seen it. The police would have seen it. And that woman would have been found.
What'd you think of that bull image? You've got some real problems, mate.
Len said, laughing.
But if you're into that sort of animal porn, that's your thing. But don't go showing it around to others. I can't unsee that now.
Probably for the best, I said, uploading a copy of the Winter Gala footage onto my phone. Thanks for your assistance, Len.
Of course, mate, he said. Wish I had more to help you with. You had more than I needed.
When I returned to the lobby, I found Lady Alice rummaging through her leather crocodile Gucci handbag.
Oh, Mr. Wildfell, she said, holding an envelope. I forgot to show you this invitation. I'm not sure why I didn't mention it before. I can't fathom it slipping my mind. But nevertheless, here, what'd you make of it?
Lady Alice handed me the invitation. It was made from sturdy paper with gold embroidered lettering. There was something else on the paper itself. A glittering substance that peppered the entirety of the invitation like stars against the beige backdrop. The invitation read, "You are cordially invited to attend the social A Twilight of a Fetlemian. A car will be sent out to your residence on the full moon to drive you to Redcombe Castle, where this enchanted night shall take place. When you arrive, in order to be let inside the castle, please recite the following verse. Now is my love already forth to come. Let all the virgins therefore well await. And ye fresh boys that tend upon her groom, prepare yourselves, for he is coming straight. Yours truly, Richard Redcombe." This was a troubling invitation, dear listener, for the implications within it were dire. You see, the fact that this event had the word Ephthalmian was a red flag. This word, aside from being a poem by Edmund Spenser, those lines of verse come from Spenser's Ode, was also a word used to describe a song or poem for a bride to recite on her way to her marital chamber. In fact, Spenser wrote this ode to his wife, Elizabeth Boyle, on their wedding night back in 1594.
"This is troubling, Lady Alice," I said, "but I think this may be a break. You're going to attend this social event, and so will I. Do you think Catherine might be there? Is this Redcombe or Red Hat?"
"I can't guarantee that, but I have a feeling she might, and I do believe this Redcombe is our Red Hat." I checked my watch. "The next full moon is tomorrow night." Lady Alice smiled.
"Okay."
She grimaced.
"Mr. Wildfell, why didn't I remember or even think of showing you this invitation before?"
"I believe the invitation was enchanted. It was made for your eyes only." I gave Lady Alice a reassuring look.
"Don't fret. I'm on the case now, and I won't let you or Catherine down."
I walked Lady Alice out to her car, a Rolls-Royce La Rose Noir drop-tail sedan, where her driver opened the sleek door. Before she got in, I told Lady Alice to keep her necklace on at all times and that I would be in contact with her in the near future.
I made my way over to Chelsea, to 11 Cadogan Gardens, the townhouse I was lodging in while in London. There, I had myself a glass of Tattinger and spoke to Cameron about the recent developments.
"We're dealing with a fae," Cameron said. "Is that what you're telling me, Kai?"
"That's right," I said. "A clever one at that." I had explained to Cameron that Richard Redcomb had enchanted this security footage so that anyone without a disciplined mind, which, to my dismay, is a great amount of people in the world, would instantly forget what they saw once they turned away from the footage. This is what happened with Len Bale. However, Redcomb's enchantments didn't stop there. They extended to anyone who saw him. This explained why Lady Alice didn't feel the urge of concern when she saw Catherine leaving with Redcomb. It also explained why Lady Alice didn't think to bring up the invitation. "And now," I said, "Lady Alice and God knows how many others are being invited to this castle to be betrothed to him in some manner." Cameron typed away on his end for the better part of a minute. I sipped my champagne while I waited for him to speak.
"Well, I'll be damned," Cameron said. "It looks like you're right, Kai. Several women throughout London's high society have gone missing, but no one seems to be batting an eye. According to these reports by our Lyle's Ravens, these women have vanished, and those that know them are continuing their lives like nothing has happened. It's like they're not even aware that their wives have disappeared." Cameron chuckled. "Hell, even some of our analysts have been bamboozled."
"I have a feeling we're dealing with a masterful fae folk," I said.
"Agreed, but I'm curious," Cameron said. "How did Lady Alice overcome Redcomb's enchantment and seek out P.I. Lawrence Wildfell for help?"
"Her love for Catherine," I said, "it dulled Redcomb's enchantment, and we're lucky to have a disciplined intelligencer in this part of the world that didn't fall to Redcomb's trick." I thought for a moment. Redcomb, a fairy, Redcap. Damn it, I was afraid this might be it.
"What's that, Kai?"
"Richard Redcomb. He's a Redcap, a goblin." A Redcap, dear listener, is a type of murderous goblin that haunts ruined castles along the border of England and Scotland. For the most part, Redcaps are known to soak their hats in the blood of their victims. And while the majority of the world sees goblins as harmless creatures, the truth is that goblins, especially the Redcap, are lethal and dangerous. The manga and anime titled Goblin Slayer does a good job of portraying just how vicious and violent goblins are. However, despite the efforts of this one anime and manga, the people world over still treat goblins and many fae folk as either cute and tricky creatures. But should you ever come across a fae, and that's only if they choose to let you see them, then chances are you will not live to tell that tale.
"That's just what we needed," Cameron said. "Well, I know you, Kai, and I know you're going to storm that goblin's castle. But remember, the goblins do not like to lose. This Redcap will do everything in its power to soak its hat in your blood."
"I know," I said. "That's why I'm going to gear up before I execute my plan to infiltrate and terminate Richard Redcomb."
"Good luck, Kai," Cameron said. "Watch yourself."
Early the next morning, I met up with Nev, or Lyle's weapons master in residence, in Hyde Park for coffee. There were snow showers falling over London, blanketing the streets anew with fresh powder. The park had transformed itself into a winter wonderland, especially with all the lights that had been placed on the trees and shrubs for the holidays. Nev was reading a copy of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens on one of the park benches. I sat next to her.
"So you're the agent Kai I keep hearing so much about," Nev said, without looking away from her novella. "I recognize your face from your HQ profile."
"Do you have the gear I requested?" I said, handing Nev a cup of coffee.
"Straight to the point, huh?"
she said, taking the coffee.
"Yes, I do. Everything you requested is in the duffel bag underneath this bench."
"Thank you, Nev. I appreciate it." Nev closed her book and took a sip of her coffee.
"Kai, if I may,
go on.
Why do you do what you do? I mean, before I became a weapons master for Lyle's, I thought about becoming a field agent.
But when I heard the survival rate for field agents is less than 20%, with an average lifespan of 2 to 5 years, well, got me thinking about other positions here.
I took a sip of my coffee. I do what I do because, at the moment, there aren't others who can do what I can. There are good people out there in this world that fall victim to the beings that defy explanation. People who cannot receive help from those in the world whose eyes are shut. And for some reason, and I believe it has nothing to do with me, perhaps fate, I'm good at what I do. I do enjoy this job, despite its risks. I enjoy helping those I can. God knows that on most assignments, that's not many. But for those that I can help, that's a win.
Do you ever think of getting out?
Nev said, glancing at me.
I only ask because most field agents never get out. They all die in the field.
The fate of the Lyos agent, I said. I seem to be having this discussion a lot in the past few months.
I'm sorry, Kai,
Nev said.
I don't mean to pry. It's just that I've seen too many field agents die while I've been here. Lyos agents come and go from London all the time, and many, if not all, have died. I guess, well, from what I've heard about you and read about you, and from speaking to you, I wouldn't want to see you die.
We all die one day, I said, standing up and swinging the duffel bag over my shoulder. That's a fate none of us can escape. I made a stop at my house in Chelsea to go through the gear Nev put together for me. Since I was dealing with a clever goblin, I was going to need a few tricks on my sleeve to counter Redcomb. The first item I had asked for was the silver mask of Apollo, a Lyos engineered mask that is able to see through illusions of any kind. The second, the armor of Achilles. This item consisted of a 3-piece tuxedo whose fabric was stronger than any armor in existence. And the third item was Kusanagi no Sarugi, the sword of Susanoo. From my analysis of the Langham security footage, I gathered that Redcomb was an experienced swordsman. It was in his body language. The way his stance was always guarded yet elegant, the way he twirled the knife that he used to prick his fingers, there was precision in his movement. Of course, this was nothing more than speculation on my part, but I didn't want to take any chances. Finally, the last item was a ghoulsite, a small parasite that attached itself onto a person's mouth and controlled their mind with a hypnotic chemical that placed the person in a state of dreaming, and usually, the dreams given to a person by the ghoulsite turned into never-ending nightmares. The ghoulsite was a new product of Lyos engineering that came after studying how the lethe functioned. Once I tested the gear and cleared it, I changed into my Achilles tuxedo, placed Kusanagi no Sarugi and the silver Apollo mask into the duffel bag, and made my way to Lady Alice's residence in Knightsbridge.
So, when the driver arrives, Lady Alice said, I'm to wait by the car door for 10 seconds before getting inside.
I nodded. That should be enough time.
For what?
Don't worry about that now. It's best if you don't know.
Very well,
Lady Alice said, sipping her tea.
You look very handsome, Mr. Walfell. That tuxedo does you justice.
Thank you. And you look ravishing in your nightingale gown.
Lady Alice smiled. You know your gowns.
I'm somewhat versed in fashion, I said. Also, it's not every day one sees a gown with 700 embedded diamonds on it. I had arrived at Lady Alice's residence early that afternoon to go over the plan concerning Redcomb. Since I couldn't avoid involving Lady Alice, I decided to discuss what we were dealing with and how we were going to go about it. Lady Alice, whether or not she believed me, didn't complain and agreed to do as I asked if it would help bring Catherine back to her. While we waited for Redcomb's car to show up, we had ourselves tea and water sandwiches while discussing the horrid state of the world. However, for a brief moment, Lady Alice and I did revel in the enjoyment of the beautiful Christmas tree she had displayed in her spacious living room. It wasn't until 6 in the evening that a Bentley rolled up to the front of the Brickstone house. Lady Alice did as planned
and while she waited those 10 seconds, I unleashed the ghoul sight. In the blink of an eye, the parasite launched itself out the front door of the house and made its way into the Bentley and into the driver's mouth. It didn't take long for the driver to step out of the car, trying to get the ghoul sight out of his mouth. But in the end, the driver succumbed to the ghoul sight and the dream it had given him. Next to the Bentley was the driver, who wasn't a man, but rather a reanimated corpse, probably the work of Redcomb. It wasn't out of the realm of possibility for this goblin to dig through graves and reanimate a body to serve him. Either way, the ghoul sight did its job and, alive or not, took control of the corpse. I threw the corpse into the trunk of the Bentley and told Lady Alice to get into the car as I got into the driver's seat. "What the bloody hell was that?" Lady Alice said as we began to drive to Redcomb Castle, which was highlighted on the car's navigation system. "What was that dead body?" "It's best not to think about what you just saw, Lady Alice," I said. "Believe me, this nightmare before Christmas has just begun." The 5-hour drive took us from London to an isolated region located in Northumberland. After clearing a patch of old twisted sycamores, we came onto a clearing that gave us a view of Redcomb Castle. I had to admit, it was a sight to behold. Standing on the edge of a cliff overlooking the northeast coast of England was a stone fortress with high walls and several small spires and a large main tower. We drove up to the front gate where a speaker asked Lady Alice for certain words of consent. Lady Alice, in a clear and authoritative voice, recited Spenser's poem. Once spoken, the gates opened and we continued our drive up to the front of the castle. We had to wait a minute for the car in front of us to discharge their fare. Then a woman waved us in. Lady Alice recognized the woman. She remembered seeing her once during a tea party that was held in Kensington Gardens. While Lady Alice couldn't remember her name, was it Diana Arnault, or perhaps Dorothy Arnold, she said, this woman had vanished over a year ago. Everyone, including Lady Alice, believed this woman had moved away. "She was an odd one," Lady Alice said. "I remember her trying to invite all of us ladies there to her place for an enchanting evening dinner. Since none of us really knew her, we refused her invitation." She paused. "I wonder if we made her feel unwelcomed. She was, after all, an American." Lady Alice's insight here was concerning. You see, dear listener, if the woman Lady Alice was referring to was, in fact, named Dorothy Arnold, then it meant Redcomb had been weaving his magic for quite some time and worldwide. Dorothy Arnold was an American socialite and heiress to a big fortune who disappeared into thin air on the 12th of December, 1910, while taking a walk through Central Park. To this day, her disappearance is unknown. "Remember, Lady Alice," I said, "keep your necklace on at all times, and do not drink anything. Do not leave the main hall where Redcomb's event is taking place, even if Catherine herself shows up and wants to lure you away from that hall. Wait for me to arrive." "I will try, Mr. Walfell," she said. "Catherine, she is..." "Please, Lady Alice, wait for me." Dorothy opened the car door, welcomed Lady Alice to Redcomb Castle, and escorted her inside. After dropping off the Bentley in a large horse stable that had been converted into a garage, and after beheading several reanimated corpses that tried to attack me once I was spotted, I made my way back to the castle proper and entered the unguarded entrance. The grand hall of the castle was enormous. There were floating chandeliers dancing around the high glass ceiling. Moonlight and stars shone through the glass. Snow seemed to fall from the ceiling and vanish before it ever touched the marble floor. And a soothing waltz was playing throughout the hall, but the source of the music was unseen. I sauntered through the large crowd of the wealthy guests until I found Lady Alice. "Have you seen Miss Collins?" I said. "Oh, thank God, Mr. Walfell," Lady Alice said.
No, I haven't. But can you believe this place?
I cannot. It's quite elaborate.
Then the music stopped. A balcony materialized out of thin air before us. Six women dressed in elegant gowns appeared. One of these women was Catherine Collins. Lady Alice noticed her too, and had to prevent her from calling out to her. There was more to this castle than what was being shown to us. Therefore, I pulled down the mask of Apollo and saw what could not be seen through the eyes of a human. There were dozens of floors of balconies above us, women in elegant gowns lined up on these balconies. In truth, these women looked more like dolls on a shelf than actual human beings. On the main balcony that overlooked the Grand Hall, a goblin wearing a red tuxedo and matching top hat appeared. Redcomb had large pointy ears, rugged fur running down his face, a large grin with fangs, and a serpent tongue along with large yellow eyes. The women and men around me whispered how attractive this Redcomb man was. I slipped off the Apollo mask for a moment. Without the mask, Redcomb looked completely different. He had the face of a man that resembled Cary Grant. There was an elegance to him, the same kind I noticed from the Langham's footage.
"Welcome to Redcomb Castle," Redcomb said. "My fellow socialites, heirs and heiresses, celebrities and royals, tonight you will experience a night of enchantment that you'll never forget." The balcony Redcomb was standing on grew stairs that led onto the floor of the Grand Hall. With a gesture of his hand, the women in gowns started down the stairs.
"These are my latest prized possessions," Redcomb said. "Some of you will recognize them once you lay eyes on their wealthy faces. Allow them to drive you mad with ecstasy," Redcomb said. "Some of you will be added to my masterpiece collection of rich divinity, while some of you will perish in orgasmic pleasure. The choice is yours." The women made their way onto the Grand Hall. Each woman approached a different person, so that everyone on the floor was faced with a woman. Lady Alice embraced Catherine, who was standing before her, expressionless. I was the only one who didn't have a dressed woman in front of me.
"Now, my beauties," Redcomb said, "preach that which I have taught you."
"Alice," Catherine said, "I've missed you."
"Oh, Catherine," Lady Alice said, tearing, "I thought I'd never see you again."
They embraced and kissed.
"Why do we fight our love for each other?" Catherine said. "Why are we married to men who we hate? We should be together." Catherine pulled out a small knife.
"Do you want to be with me, Alice?"
"More than anything, my love."
"Lady Alice," I said, "this Catherine is no longer the Catherine you knew. She's gone." My voice fell on deaf ears. Catherine slit her wrist. Blood began spewing out.
"Catherine," Lady Alice said, grabbing her bleeding wrist, "what are you doing?"
"If you want to be with me," Catherine said, "then you will save me by drinking my blood."
What?
Catherine held out her bloody wrist.
"Only you can stop this bleeding."
"Oh, God."
I tried to stop Lady Alice from tasting Catherine's blood, but she shoved me away, hard. When I regained my footing, I was too late. Lady Alice had placed her mouth on Catherine's wrist. It was the same effect that Redcomb had on Catherine. At first, Lady Alice took in Catherine's blood with some hesitation, but after a few seconds, Lady Alice drank Catherine's blood like it was the greatest tasting drink in the world. In fact, everyone around me was drinking the blood of their loved one like a child tasting chocolate for the first time. It wasn't long before the white marble floor of the Grand Hall turned red with blood.
"You, who are you who stands in my castle unwelcomed?" Redcomb said, pointing at me.
"What have you done to these people?" I said.
"I haven't done anything. These rich elite have done this to themselves."
I understood what Redcomb meant as he finished his sentence.
I saw the transformation taking place before me. Lady Alice had gone from a fair woman to a hairy goblin. Everyone in the hall had been transformed into hairy goblins. But Catherine and the other dressed women, however, still looked human, even through the eyes of the mask of Apollo.
"You've bear witness to what the rich elite truly look like," Redcombe said. "Their wealth has rotted their souls. And now, that rot has come through."
"But these women in gowns have my blood," Redcombe said. "While their souls are just as rotted as their lovers, they remain beautiful because of my blood. They remain my eternal cattle, the ones who will bring forth more rich blood for me to devour." I saw what he meant. Redcombe's blood gave the dressed women a longer lifespan, that of a goblin's, and therefore could live on for centuries before death came for them. And that time, Redcombe would drink their blood without a fuss or word from these women.
"And what of the men?" I said. "Your collection only has women."
"I am the only king here," he said. "I've no need for rich human men. They're worthless and their blood tastes like shit. But the blood of a rich woman is sweet and gratifying.
And those you've turned into goblins have now earned the right to serve me," Redcombe said. "To serve as my slaves, who will continue to upkeep of my castle and guard it against intruders like yourself."
Redcombe tipped his hat at me. This was the signal to the newly hatched goblins in the hall to attack. Lady Alice, or the goblin who was once Lady Alice, was the first to come after me. She swung her razor-sharp claws in a frenzy. I unsheathed Kusanagi no Tsurugi and sliced off her hands. Then I sliced my way through a majority of the goblins trying to slice me. When I made it to a clearing in the hall, I pulled out a canister filled with ghoul sites and unleashed them. The small parasites, which were about the size of air pods, went to work on all the active goblins trying to kill me. Within a couple of minutes, the frenzied goblins were all asleep on the floor. Redcombe applauded.
"Ah, so it seems like you are the one who May spoke about. The eccentric agent of Laios." Redcombe scoffed. "It must be you. No other human would have survived this scene."
Redcombe jumped off the balcony onto the ground floor. He stuck his index finger out, and the claw on the finger grew long and sword-like. I pointed my sword toward him. "What has Tamamo no Mae told you? I haven't heard from her in a while." Redcombe stared at me with those large yellow eyes.
"You'll hear about her soon enough, if I allow you to walk out of here."
"Well then, let's have at it." Redcombe lunged at me with great speed with his claw sword. I parried his blade with mine several times. It was difficult to strike him as he was fast with his hand, and I had to be sure I didn't trip on the sleeping goblins on the floor. One trip, and I was done for. It also didn't help that human strength was useless against a redcap. Redcombe and I sparred for several minutes, going back and forth with strikes and parries. The Achilles tuxedo did its job and protected me from getting slashed open. Had I not had on this suit, I would have died twice over, as Redcombe, I had to admit, was a master swordsman.
"It's been a while," Redcombe said, catching his breath, "since I've had fun like this. You know, not many humans ever wander into the fairy realm nowadays. They're too concerned with their own fantasies to see what's really before them. Those were the days. Your lot would just waltz into my realm, and they thought they were seeing magic," he snarled, "when in reality, they just wandered into their early graves."
Our swords clashed several more times, Redcombe landing several hits on my armor and zero lands on my part. If I didn't switch tactics, I knew I wasn't going to last much longer. The Achilles armor, while strong, could only take so much damage before it began to falter. I could feel its strength deteriorating with each blow Redcombe landed. So far, my swiftness had kept my vital parts from getting slashed, but I was growing tired. Therefore, I thumbed down the small button on the hilt of the sword. This transformed it from Kusanagi no Sarugi into Ami no Murakumo no Sarugi. I threw the sword into the air, and true to its name, the sword, on its own, began to spin, creating a gathering of clouds that hid the sword.
Oh, clever trick, Redcomb said, but that won't do anything.
Redcomb leapt toward me with a strike that would have ended me. But at the moment his sword was about to pierce me dead center on my face, Ami no Murakumo no Sarugi sliced through the clouds above us and, with the speed of lightning itself, cut through Redcomb with such force that it pushed the goblin onto the ground. I walked up to the now pinned Redcomb and recited the Our Father prayer in Latin while placing a crucifix one had pulled off a turned goblin on his chest. This caused Redcomb to scream as his body burst into flames. Once the flames ebbed, the only thing that remained of Richard Redcomb was a large tooth. Lyle's intelligencers were dispatched the next morning to Redcomb Castle to collect and dispose of the turned goblins. Their human form was forever lost. The women in gowns, over 1,000 in total, were collected and buried in their proper graves. However, once Redcomb had died, the bodies of those women who were living as his cattle for centuries caught up to time. Therefore, what intelligencers buried were nothing more than rotted and disfigured corpses. Since there was nothing that could be done for Lady Alice and those who suffered that horrendous fate, Lyle's director, Patrice Landless, gave the order to release into the media that these women had disappeared. Over the course of time, history would call the disappearance of Lady Alice and those like her unsolved. As far as the public was concerned, Lady Alice went out for a walk in Hyde Park on a cold December night and vanished. After a thorough analysis of Redcomb's castle, it was discovered that Redcomb was only one of many red-cap goblins around the world. This disturbing piece of information reveals that those people, men and women, who go missing without a trace worldwide may have been abducted in the same manner Catherine Collins had been. And because goblins have the ability to shapeshift, much like Redcomb, determining whether a person is abducted by goblins or humans can be difficult. Once examinations of Redcomb's castle were complete, the goblin's castle was burned to the ground, and because the stones used to build it were enchanted, Lyle's intelligencers made sure to disintegrate the castle remains until there was nothing left. When William Shakespeare wrote about royal characters such as Hamlet, the Henry plays, the Richards, Macbeth, and so on, he always managed to show just how corrupt and lost these royal characters were. When juxtaposed to regular people, the royals appeared to be the same, if not worse. And this was no accident. Shakespeare saw through the facade of royalty. He understood that the rich and powerful were nothing more than spoiled children with too much power. 400 years later, while there may not be royal families at the helm of a country per se, not much has changed. There are the rich of the world that still play out the same formula Shakespeare had written down long ago. While many things change in the world, the one thing that never changes is human nature. A savage and selfish thing, human nature. This agent has seen it in more ways than one. While Lady Alice enjoyed discussing positive change for the world, she, a person in power, did nothing about it. She wanted others to do something when she could have done something herself. It is an unfortunate axiom that those in positions of power tend to do nothing to help improve the world, but will do all in their power to improve their lives. Of course, there is nothing wrong with improving one's life, but when in a position to improve the world, one should. Lady Alice and everyone who was present at Redcomb Castle fell victim to the splendor of wealth.
their souls had rotted long ago, and so long as there are those in positions of power, those whose souls have rotted, there will always be Richard Redcombs wandering the world, feasting on rich blood, ensuring over time the destruction of humanity.